Hello and welcome to MOAS. I'm glad you could join us. In this episode, we're looking at refugee art performance and forced migration. We're going to speak to organizations and artists using art in different ways to learn how communities and refugees can talk to each other and to make new lives in Europe. Stay tuned to the end as we'll be talking to the creator of a campaign telling us not to forget the contributions of refugees. It's a rant inspired by American hot sauce that goes into relativity, music, and activism. Let's start off by looking at Refugee Hosts, an organization exploring the relationship and experiences between refugees and host communities. The research focuses on 9 specific communities in Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey, together hosting over 5 million refugees of the Syrian conflict. It's hoped that by setting up creative writing workshops, the hosts and refugee communities can understand what hosting means and break down the negative stereotypes of refugees. Elena Fidian-Kasmia is the project investigator.
So what we're really looking at, which has been underexplored in the academic research and also in policy and practitioner literatures, is the extent to which refugees become hosts to newly displaced groups, in this case from Syria. So there are commonalities across Jordan and Lebanon insofar as large numbers of people displaced from Syria have found safety, or at least spaces of protection to a certain degree, in the Palestinian refugee camps themselves. And this really highlights the need to have a historical understanding of the processes of displacement, which mean that Badawi refugee camp in North Lebanon, for example, where we've been conducting research, has been home to around 40,000 Palestinian refugees since the 1950s, but also in the 1970s became home to refugees from the Tel el-Zatar refugee camp in North Beirut, which involved a large number of people being displaced at that stage in 1976. And then in 2007, again, Palestinian refugees from Nahr el-Bared within Lebanon also being displaced when that camp was destroyed. So Badawi refugee camp has been home to different groups of Palestinians displaced within Lebanon. So it's been hosting different groups, different generations of refugees in that regard, but has also now become home to refugees from Syria, including Syrians, but also Iraqis and Palestinians who had previously been living in Syria. So these spaces are very complicated spaces with many different social dynamics, but they're spaces not just of refuge, but also of hosting. So refugees arrive and then they become hosts to new communities. And that's one of the key issues that we're exploring, to actually identify how a community can become a sustainable community of welcome, a community that can endure the reality of being very precarious, a very precarious space, but also a place that offers safety and protection to different groups of people at different stages.
So you want to look at how hosts and refugees interact in context, but why use creative writing workshops?
My colleague, Professor Lindsay Stonebridge from the University of East Anglia, is one of the co-investigators on the project with myself and two other colleagues. And she's a professor of modern history and of literature, and she'll be running the creative writing workshops with our project's writer-in-residence, Yusuf Mustafa Kasmir, with the support of our project partners, Penn International and also Stories in Transit. So the backdrop to running these creative writing workshops is that we know that refugees are often framed in the media and in NGO reports as suffering victims. And refugees' experiences have often been silenced because people affected by conflict are expected to fit what we can call a humanitarian narrative. And this narrative runs along the lines that refugees are passive victims that need international assistance, rather than recognising that refugees have always tried to find solutions to their own problems and those of other refugees, and indeed that refugees are active agents who have creative ways of responding to their experiences of displacement, not only to stay alive, but also to live meaningful lives. So what we're aiming to do to challenge a number of the assumptions relating to the silent suffering victim who is awaiting an international saviour to come in and offer them protection is rather to use creative writing workshops to offer a creative space for participants to simultaneously document, trace and resist experiences of and also responses to displacement. So the participants involved in the creative writing workshops, which will involve both refugees and hosts, will be invited to reflect on their own journeys and their personal encounters, including their journeys in and out of displacement and in and out of hosting experiences as well. So experiences of having hosted other people in the past and hosts' experiences of being displaced in the past. So rather than thinking about writing through experiences of displacement, one of the key aims of the creative writing workshops is to think around what does it mean to host and to be hosted, and how does one write about critically and creatively write about these experiences. And then together as groups, we will be exploring how refugees and hosts' stories connect in time, in style and in motif with the stories of other people, both from the present and from the past. And then we'll be presenting these connected stories to different audiences in the Middle East and in the UK. And we're aiming to challenge the image of the individual suffering refugee by providing evidence of the creative resistance and the resilience of different communities and traditions of refugees and hosts alike. We're aiming to create communities of storytelling and communities of creative resistance through these creative writing workshops.
Let's find out more about why literature helps refugee hosts from its writer in residence. Yusuf Kasmeya is a Palestinian poet, translator and Arabic tutor at Oxford University. He was born and brought up in Badawi refugee camp in northern Lebanon. Using his own experiences, he's helping refugee hosts examine how new people and languages change the shape of refugee camps.
When refugee hosts started, we also thought of employing literature to give also ourselves the opportunity to transcend the mainly the social, I would say, sciences, maybe modes of thinking, and to see what literature might bring us and might maybe provoke or invoke in these surroundings and these settings, and that's why I'm part of it. But I'm also a refugee. I'm trying to see things the way, for example, I would see them as somebody who's there. Although, of course, I no longer live in Badawi. I live here in Oxford and I teach here. But I'm trying mainly to say to myself, bearing witness has nothing to do with ownership. Bearing witness has to do with observing, and to observe with a degree of subtlety and sensitivity. And I think that through these sensitivities, we are trying to see how people are interacting with one another, and how literature and the concept of the narrative is evolving. And yes, these are the things, or the main things, that have attracted me to the refugee hosts, and also to see who, and to say to ourselves, but who is the host, in fact, and who is the refugee? And I think that these questions are very pertinent these days, because it is so important to disrupt this humanitarian hierarchy. And to say that giving at times has to do with taking away. And it's not just a benign act. There are clashes, there are collisions, there are things that are happening maybe that are being concealed, and things that we're trying to investigate. To investigate using, of course, in addition to social sciences, we're using literary lenses.
You are writing the camp. What do you mean by this?
when we thought about writing the camp, we thought of simply investigating the verb itself to write, and to write as an archaeological act, but also as a literary act that is happening, not just happening from our own perspective, but also happening when we are not there as well. So this happening, or this, let's say, continuity, is not just being observed when we're there. We know that people are also responding to these estates, maybe by let's say taking photos of things. Now, as you know, that there are smartphones, refugees, you can see how they are, let's say, taking photos of themselves in refugee camps and saying to their friends, let's say Syrians who are based maybe in Europe, for instance, and now I am part of this community. And I think that trying to use photography, trying to use also to use certain sites such as cemeteries where people die, where people are buried, as places that are simply inviting a change. I think that before we used to take these things for granted, but I think that the arrival of these refugees and the way the space itself has become congested, maybe I do not know how to state such a thing without also maybe referring it to dying. Because when we see how refugees from different backgrounds, before the dead used to be sent, let's say, back to Syria, if things are a bit safe, but now they are accepting to be buried in the camps. I think that this is a fascinating and a sad shift at the same time, because people are stating their background on the tombstone. And I think that when we see the word archive, we see how this piece of marble is inviting us to simply speak to this solidity, and to say that these people wanted first to assert their presence as people who are buried there, but equally refer us to their maybe origins. And I think that this dichotomy is somewhat not just intriguing and interesting, but as if like it has continued the question of solidarity beyond, of course, life and living, to the space of death and dying. And I think that that's why these are things that maybe we do not know how to assess, let's say, our progress, or to assess what we've achieved. But what we can say, and we can say maybe quite vigorously, is that at least we are managing to capture some of these changes, some of these maybe some of these elements that are happening, and that are also happening, not just happening and monopolized or being monopolized by certain groups, but also at times shared.
Now, let's return to Central Europe and find out about a project called Restart. The social enterprise was created by German business student Jonas Nipko. Inspired by working with artists from conflict zones, Jonas wants to give newcomer artists coming to Europe a way to produce artwork and make money. It's been running for a year, and Restart now supports almost 40 artists in Germany, Austria, and the Netherlands.
The original thought of Restart was first to build up an online marketplace for art made by newcomers, where they can present themselves and actually sell their artwork, so create some additional income. We haven't done this yet for several reasons, because actually before selling art, what they actually need is materials and studios, and so this is what we kind of focused on. But so when we had our first exhibition in April 2016, it was just planned actually to make people aware of Restart and what we plan to do with online marketplace. But what we realized is during these exhibitions, or at these exhibitions, this is the opportunity where people actually meet and get to know each other. And there's already so much talk about newcomers online, and even those having this refugee welcome attitude don't actually know a newcomer in person, which kind of motivated us to keep doing these exhibitions, and we see it as a great opportunity to actually bring locals and newcomers together. So we had a couple exhibitions here in Berlin. We participated in big music festivals in Germany. There are also like 2-3 coming up this summer, where we have like a outdoor open air exhibition with 2 or 3 artists. Then, as I said, we have a couple of local groups in different cities. So what they do is, these are people reaching out to artists in their community, and we help them organizing an exhibition in their city. And so it happened in Hamburg, for example, or in Vienna, close to Amsterdam. And well, there are many different opportunities, institutions approaching us, hey, would you like to exhibit something? And so there's always like an opportunity that we can offer to the artist to present themselves and participate in an exhibition.
How did you connect with the refugee artists you support?
This trip to Israel and Palestine, and the thoughts that I had afterwards, or these questions in my head, and I just shared these thoughts with my personal network, and like on social media, and told people about like what happened, and then I would like to start something like an online marketplace and support newcomer artists that recently arrived in Germany and Europe. And then people just started commenting on my Facebook post and linked me to other people that I engaged in the work with newcomers. And then, of course, once you meet one artist, then you find another artist. And interestingly, it's like this, that most artists that we work with come from Syria, and when they come from Syria and have an art background, then they also studied, or most of them studied in Damascus, because as far as I understood and I know, there's only one opportunity for people to study art, fine art in Syria, and this is in Damascus. So many artists, also the artists that now are based in different regions in different countries, If I meet them, I suddenly find out that they know other artists that we work with for the fact that they study at the same university.
What does their artwork express?
Different, I would say, from artist to artist, but one could say that the experience they've made through the past couple of years with the war and the situation in Syria, it's something that they pick up in most of their artworks. There's a lot of pain, usually. One can see it in the colors. But what I would also say is that many artists also include some colorful notion to their artwork, symbolizing hope and peace, and so on the other hand, there are also artists who completely try to avoid that topic and just find also the opportunity to maybe keep themselves busy with something else than the conflict or the situation in Syria when doing art, and this is why they then don't discuss it in their artwork. But I would say, yeah, for most of them, that actually applies, that they use art also as a tool to express themselves and use it kind of as a therapy for themselves.
Parmis Vard is an Iranian artist who fled her country because of the political turmoil. She's currently in Austria and has been exhibiting her work at numerous events with Restart. Created with pastels, her portraits of people are a shock of colour, reflecting turmoil and the pursuit of inner peace.
My art gives me strength to fight the difficulties and help me to get out of my innocence. And it forces me to have a goal in the world, and my goal is to remind our inner strength and peaceful world.
Is there a message you try to share with people who view your work?
Yes, I believe it. Every human has feeling within himself that can be quit and another to others. I believe art is inside everyone and just need to be expressed. We forgot our dreams, our soil, and just looking for physical relaxation. And for that, we forgot each other and ourselves. And I just have a question in my paint. What we are looking for? What is our dream? How much do we pay attention to ourselves? And this is my question in my paint.
Can you tell me more about what inspired your painting, Blue?
Once I saw a photo that was in this form, and it reminded me of myself. So I paint a face like myself. Blue is for me the color of peace and calm. I believe it when the blue, if darker, it shows inner turmoil. And my dreams, my soul is blue. And I just want to say to another person, I want to say, give me peace instead. I paint the world blue. And I think this paint is me and all of the people who are looking for peace. And with this painting, I wanted to tell the world, listen to the silence of the human and don't become this calm blue, that darkness.
And do you have a plan for the future?
I want to study architecture and continue my art too, and I hope Restart support more refugees artists, and we can together keep alive art and give peace to the whole world and show the world that we don't give up. And painting an exhibition, my work helped me find meaning and purpose in my the challenges of my life as a new artist in a new country. And I hope the rest of the artists will find their way to and believe in themselves. I am also give painting lessons to young children in the refugee camps, most of whom were from Afghanistan and Syria. I hope in the future we can together teach to many children in another country's painting. And yes, this is my hope for the future.
Manaf Attar is also a newcomer artist working with Restart. He fled his home in Damascus, Syria, to avoid being conscripted to fight other Syrians. Since moving to Berlin and working with Restart, he's presented his evolving artwork at exhibitions and music festivals. Art is an important therapy for him.
I really stopped any kind of drawing, any kind of freehand stuff with the pencil, with whatever. I just focused on this weird thing that I'm doing because I realized that it's nice. You know, it's making me feel good. It's becoming like a meditation. Whenever I'm not feeling that nice, or I just want to like loop out from people or something, I just hold the pen, don't even think what I'm going to draw. You know, I just put, like, it's just like I'm writing or something. You know, I don't even look at what I'm drawing, barely. And I'm just listening to some kind of music or whatever, you know, like, it's always like a meditation to me. It really became as a meditation thing. Like, it's where I'm really out. You know, I'm just really not thinking about stuff, just like...
What kind of art do you produce?
So the thing is that my work, like, that's something that now I am gonna change again. I'm starting to change again because I had some kind of a plan that I will cut off any kind of art, just focus on this thing that I'm doing and really keep doing it till it becomes like a technique. Then I'm really able to do it almost eye-folded, you know? And it's just like, as I see it, for me, my favorite colors are black and white. And black and white. This is how I see colors more, like I prefer colors this way. Anything that's black and white, even pictures, I like it way much better. So I just kind of have the same patterns, the same kind of drawing, but it's always changing because now I'm putting it into outlines.
It's at this stage of the interview that Manaf starts showing us the artwork he's produced and his room, itself a work of art.
So this is the first three posters that I started with. I already did them. And that kind of put me out there in Berlin.
How do you describe that technique?
That's the thing. So it's not always something I am instantly drawing. Sometimes it's just outlines of something. So like here, I just took the outlines of Darth Vader and just drew Darth Vader. So I started with this. Like this is the big thing because Jonas printed out the really small drawings that I do like on notebooks. And then we started there and now I am doing, like this is my wall. But I'm doing really, really big canvases, you know? So this is actually now what I am, like, this is the only thing that I'm projecting, kind of, the exhibitions, my art, my whole thing. I'm not seeing myself so much as an artist, especially in Berlin, because artists here are all in all. Like, he can really do it all, you know? You give him a sprayer and he gives you a graffiti that's 3 meters, 2 meters big, you know? So now I reached the level again where I'm really good with this black and white stuff, and I want to start adding colors and some more digital art.
Before we go, let's chat to King Kwan, creator of Made by Refugee. The sticker and mural campaign started this March, and it reminds us of the contributions refugees have made to our lives throughout history. It's been well received.
It was just a simple little rant. I was just talking about how if this guy named David Tran didn't come over from Vietnam as a refugee, nobody here would be praising how much Sriracha is great over here. And if you know anything about what's happening in the U.S., the biggest trend is Sriracha hot sauce. So it was really funny. You know, there's a lot of people that go against refugees and everything, and I realized that, you know, it's really hard to argue with that because they have contributed so much throughout history. You know, they're not just like, you know, refugees aren't, they're humans. They're not, you know, useless people of society, you know, drains on a city's resources. And I just wanted to prove that everyone has a potential and everyone has value. And that's the reason why I started this project.
Why stickers and murals though?
The idea was there to show that refugees have more potential than people really think in public. And, you know, we're trying to figure out what's the best way to put it out there. And, you know, we figured we're in the advertising world. We might as well use what we know to our advantage and, you know, push a good message out there. Because, you know, we could always be selling different products, but why don't we sell an idea that really impacts the world? So we just moved forward and just decided stickers was the best way. It's cost-free. And stickers, graffiti, there's always an era of political activism, and I felt like that was the perfect way to get the message forward.
Can you give me an idea of the people you were trying to recognize?
I mean, honestly, I was just looking for a good angle. Like, I was looking for, like, tangible products that people use, and then it got a lot deeper. You know, some of them were, like, products you find off shelves. You know, even Steve Jobs' father was a Syrian refugee. There's just so many things that go back to, like, the idea where it's, like, without them, you wouldn't be able to enjoy these things here. You know, things from this to cars, to philosophers, to scientists, to physicists, to Nobel Peace Prize winners.
And what's next?
I feel like hype comes in waves. If you're kind of like on that wave, it's good to ride it because that's when you get the most information out. But we are definitely coming up with like new ideas at the current moment. And we're working with another entity called the Refugee Nation. We're in the drawing board trying a couple of new ideas to kind of get this point across to people around the world. Because, you know, it's a project, but it's really like, we really feel like this is something goodwill, you know, something that really comes out of our hearts that we really pour into.
Before you go, make sure to check out our gallery showcasing artworks from Manaf Parmis and poetry from Yusuf. In the next podcast, we're discussing the dangerous world of human trafficking along one of Africa's most well-known routes. We'll be drawing from journalists, academics, and organizations documenting the harsh reality, its financial connections, and ways to monitor it on the ground. Until then, you can follow us on our social media. Check out our latest updates on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Audioboom. Or you can support our rescue missions by giving whatever you can to help us save lives at sea. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe for more podcasts from us. From all of us here at MOAS, goodbye.